I didn't know at first that praise could function like a sedative. I thought I was just being professional, attentive, good at managing up. I learned his rhythms quickly. A compliment in the morning kept the office steady. Recognition in a meeting made him generous with deadlines. Silence, though, did something else. Silence made him restless. Silence made him watch me. It wasn't that he wanted admiration from everyone. He wanted it from me, from the way I framed his ideas, from how quickly I responded, from whether I looked impressed when he spoke. When I stopped supplying that steady drip of validation, the air shifted. He didn't confront me. He didn't explode. He recalibrated. My work became invisible. My contributions softened into background noise. My mistakes, real or imagined, sharpened. I didn't understand yet that I'd crossed an invisible line. I'd mistaken professionalism for safety. I'd mistaken his neediness for harmless ego. I didn't know withdrawal could feel like punishment. I didn't know how quietly revenge could be administered in an office that pretended to run on merit. I was working in a mid-sized consulting firm in Paris, the kind that sold strategy with confidence and charged for certainty. We dressed well. We spoke in calm, polished sentences. We believed in process. I had been there 3 years when he became my direct supervisor. He was promoted from a parallel team, not because his outcomes were exceptional, but because leadership liked how he made them feel in meetings. He was articulate. He was deferential upward. He mirrored whoever had power in the room. At first, he seemed easy to work with, attentive, curious. He asked for my input often, then repeated it later with small refinements that made it sound like his own thinking had arrived there naturally. I didn't mind. That's how offices work. Ideas migrate. Credit blurs. I cared more about momentum than ownership. What I didn't see right away was how closely he tracked my reactions. He watched my face when he spoke. He noticed whether I nodded. He lingered near my desk after meetings, asking what I thought, not about the substance, but about how he came across. He asked if he sounded confident, if the room seemed convinced, if the client respected him. I answered honestly at first. I told him when things landed well. I told him when they didn't. Over time, I learned which answers relaxed him. Praise smoothed his voice. Approval loosened his shoulders. When I affirmed him, he became generous. When I didn't, he grew brittle. There were small signs I ignored because they didn't feel dangerous on their own. He forwarded emails where executives praised him and asked if I agreed with their assessment. He rewrote documents I'd already finalized, not to improve them, but to add language that highlighted his leadership. He corrected me in meetings on minor details, then followed up privately to apologize and ask if I understood why he had to do it. I told myself he was insecure. I told myself that managing his ego was part of the job. I'd worked with worse. I'd seen men who yelled, men who touched, men who cornered. This was subtler. This was psychological weather, changeable, but survivable. What I didn't name was how the balance of power was shifting, how my emotional labor was becoming part of his operating system, how my silence was starting to register as dissent. The change started when I stopped reacting the way he expected, not abruptly, not dramatically. I was tired. I had my own projects, my own pressures. I answered questions with substance instead of affirmation. I focused on outcomes, not optics. I didn't gush when he spoke. I didn't soften feedback to protect his confidence. He noticed immediately. He began asking for updates more frequently, then questioning details that had never concerned him before. He asked why I chose certain approaches, why I didn't consult him earlier, why clients hadn't responded yet. The tone was polite. The implication was constant. Something in my performance had shifted, and he wanted me to feel it. My work started coming back with comments that didn't quite make sense. Requests to adjust tone. Suggestions to reframe conclusions that were already aligned with our recommendations. He asked me to loop him into emails he'd never previously needed to see. He wanted visibility, control, proof of relevance. In meetings, he summarized my work without acknowledging my role. When I spoke, he interrupted gently, reframing my points as clarifications rather than contributions. If I pushed back, he smiled, the way people do when they want to appear collaborative while asserting dominance. I considered addressing it directly. I rehearsed conversations in my head, calm, professional explanations, but every version ended the same way, with him wounded, with him defensive, with me suddenly positioned as difficult. I watched how he treated others. Junior staff were praised loudly, then corrected harshly in private. Senior colleagues were flattered relentlessly. He performed competence upward and control downward. With me, it was personal. He needed my validation because I'd seen him before the promotion. I knew the gaps. I knew the effort behind the performance. When I didn't provide reassurance, he found ways to remind me who had authority. He excluded me from meetings I'd previously led. He reassigned parts of my work to others, citing efficiency. He praised team cohesion while isolating me from decision-making. I started documenting things quietly. Dates, shifts in responsibility, comments that didn't align with feedback I'd received before. I didn't plan to escalate, I just wanted to stay oriented. Gaslighting works best when you're tired. The most destabilizing part was how normal everything looked from the outside. No raised voices, no inappropriate messages, just a slow erosion of trust and standing. When I asked for clarity, he framed it as concern. When I expressed frustration, he framed it as stress. I realized then that his need for validation wasn't incidental. It was structural. He required emotional regulation from his subordinates, especially from me. When I stopped supplying it, the system corrected me. The formal review was the culmination. He described my performance as inconsistent. Strong technically, he said, but resistant to alignment. He suggested I struggled with authority. He questioned my adaptability. None of it was overtly false. All of it was strategically framed. I listened. I nodded. I recognized the pattern. The more composed I remained, the more he leaned into concern. He offered support, coaching, a path forward that required closer oversight. I declined the path, not dramatically, just clearly. I asked for a transfer. He seemed surprised, then offended. He told me it might reflect poorly on my commitment. I told him I understood. The transfer happened months later. By then, the damage was done. My confidence had taken hits I didn't acknowledge until I felt them in my body. Hesitation where there hadn't been any. Carefulness in rooms where I'd once spoken freely. He stayed. He advanced again. People described him as demanding but effective. I watched from a distance as new women learned his rhythms, as praise circulated, as silence was punished quietly. What stayed with me wasn't anger, it was clarity. I learned how easily emotional dependency can masquerade as leadership, how validation can become currency, how withdrawing it can provoke retaliation without leaving fingerprints. I didn't lose my career, I didn't win a case, nothing was resolved, but I stopped feeding the system that required me to manage a man's ego to protect my work. The residue of that choice followed me, sharpened me. I learned to recognize hunger disguised as authority, and I learned that refusing to supply validation can be an act of resistance, even when it costs you something you can't immediately name.